Thank you both for your testimony. I'd like to ask either one of you a question that I raised this morning in our committee chair meeting in discussing this hearing today and the overall issue that we are addressing. And there was consternation raised among the appropriators, needless to say, because CBO has scored this settlement. And my question to either or both of you really would be, can you help Congress identify funds that we can help pay for this settlement?
My understanding, Mr. Chairman, is there that we're having discussions in the administration on that point. I mean, this is an unusual case in that the judgment fund is available for this purpose. The CBO scoring is, I am not a budgeteer, I'm happy to report, so I don't understand the vagaries of the scoring process. Normally, when you have a judgment fund situation, you don't have this issue arise. But I can assure you, Mr. Chairman, that we are having intense discussions with the White House and with OMB, and we'll be happy to get back to you on that very shortly.
That would be most helpful, David. Thank you. Let me continue with you then, David, and ask you a question about the $2 billion fund that expires at the end of 10 years, with any of the remaining funds, of course, returning to the General Treasury. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
What is the rationale for not depositing any remaining funds into the Education Fund, which is also established by the proposed settlement agreement?
We anticipate, Mr. Chairman, that these funds will all be spent on buying back fractionated interests. It's our intent, actually, working closely with, once we get approval here, working closely with the tribes and prioritizing the efforts to accelerate those buybacks. We'd like to have them, most of them occur in the early years. We don't see this program going out 10 years at all. The $2 billion, we think, is roughly sized to potentially buy back most of the parcels that have 20 or more owners. But when you get into a fractionated land tracts that have anywhere from 5 to 20, all of a sudden you're getting into the likely cost of that buyback being well in excess of $2 billion. So what we see is that this is going to make a huge dent in the problem, but it's not going to resolve the problem.
Could you please explain why you think a formula with an opt-out clause is more appropriate than an administrative option for the resolution of the trust administration claims?
Let me defer to the lawyer here on that one, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
There was discussion earlier about a streamlined process for claimants. And I think we view the class action mechanism as the streamlined process to give individual Native Americans who funds or recovery for potential trust administration claims. The opt-out would put them in the exact same place they would be otherwise today with respect to those claims, claims that, you know, to date, at least they, you know, very few have been brought. I know there was a question earlier about prior examples. There are very few examples of these kinds of claims being brought. So we think that this mechanism through the settlement that we've created is that streamlined means to offer some measure of compensation to individuals. Otherwise, they can choose to go to court as they can today.
Thank you. Ms. Tracy's.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You heard the testimony of the prior panel, and several members, including me, at least raised the issue of attorney's fees. My question to you, at least we couldn't find it on the website, the settlement, the documents of that. You responded that there was an agreement. Could you provide, we haven't seen it, so would you provide that to us, the document specifically regarding the settlement as to attorney fees and how that was derived?
Yes, we will. And just for the record, it indicates that the parties will litigate between $50 and $99.9 million for past attorney's fees. And we're happy to provide the document.
Okay, good. How soon can we expect that?
We can get it to you today.
Okay, that'd be fine. The next question I have is, you heard again the prior panel. The prior panel was suggesting that this is a big step forward, but there just needs to be more transparency and understanding of what the settlement agreement means to everybody. Mr. Grijalva asked a question, I think, to Mr. Nunez. Is the issue transparency or unanimity? And I think the response was both. You are suggesting, okay, let's pass this, then we'll have outreach. How do you reconcile the differences of opinion on that?
I think, Congressman, I think that's not quite the dichotomy. We are engaged in outreach, and we will engage in more outreach. I should say that at the Department of the Interior, we have received enormous positive feedback about this settlement from Indian Country. No doubt there are some folks, and you had a couple here on the panel, who are not happy with the settlement or who question it. I firmly believe you will not have unanimity on anything like this. We believe there's enormous interest in Indian Country in resolving this, enormous credibility with the plaintiff class representatives. Eloise Cobell and her representatives and their attorneys have enormous credibility in Indian Country because they know how hard they have worked in this matter for the last 13 years. I hope and think that we're fresh blood in terms of the Department of the Interior. We haven't been involved in the past. We have come at this from a fresh look, and I think we have some credibility. We will continue to work, and I think your hearing here has been very helpful, and thank you for holding it, in terms of continuing to provide an opportunity for us to explain some of this. We will be happy to do more outreach. I think the point that Tom just mentioned is important, though. There is a judicial process here. The judge has to approve, has a fairness hearing, basically, that will resolve a number of these questions. And then once, if he says this is a fair and appropriate settlement from a judicial perspective, then the class action notice processes start. And we are very anxious to use every mechanism available to make sure everyone in Indian Country who wants to understand this fully understands their rights, their opportunities to opt out, to opt in, whatever. But we can't accelerate that until we continue through this process and then we have the judge approve the settlement in the fairness hearing.
Yeah, and if I can just clarify, what will happen is once legislation is enacted, the settlement goes before the judge. He will preliminarily approve, which will then trigger all of the notice to individual class members and all of the outreach that is contemplated by the agreement. People will have the opportunity to file objections, raise concerns, and then we anticipate a significant fairness hearing some months down the road in front of the court.
Well, all of that is after the fact, and Congress has a responsibility first. Now, I mean, I think that's self-evident, although we haven't seen any legislation, so we don't know exactly what, I mean, I presume it's a settlement agreement. But my point is that this hearing was designed to bring out differing views and different observations on this settlement agreement. I think everything that I've heard is that this is a very, very big step forward. It needs to be addressed, but it needs to be understood. And I think the testimony was pretty clear that that Indian Country in general wants to know more about it this legislation is passed. And our responsibility as members of Congress, obviously, is to listen to the different views of our constituents, because we represent you people. I concede you did a lot of working on this. I'm not arguing with that at all. But there is certainly seems to be a little bit different approach, and that's why I was asking. But what I'm unfortunately hearing is, well, let's pass this and we'll take that next step. So I hope I didn't hear it quite that way. If your outreach is aggressive, I'm certainly will hear from Indian Country in general that this process has moved forward.
No, and thank you, Congressman, for those comments, and I appreciate the chance to clarify once again the day of the settlement. We were on a conference call with scores of tribal leaders around the country explaining the settlement. We have tribes visiting our department, as you well know, as they visit your offices on the Hill, week in and week out. We have been doing extensive discussions with many, many tribes. Just last week, both Hillary Tompkins and Tom Perelli spent a couple of hours in front of a panel with the National Congress on American Indians, responding to all comers, all questions about this settlement. There are important meetings next week that have been already alluded to. We will continue to do that. We appreciate the fact that it's very important now to answer these questions. And we thank you for this opportunity to hear the issues that we heard today and to respond to them and to have the opportunity for a dialogue with this important committee on this subject.
Okay. I will just conclude. I appreciate that. I encourage you to continue your outreach. I suspect, since we have the responsibility here to pass this legislation, that we will hear back from Indian country as to the success of that outreach, and I think that's probably a fair way to do it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimonies, Secretary Hayes, and also our Deputy Attorney General and Ms. Tompkins. Welcome. It's a real pleasure, and certainly I'm sure that throughout Indian country, tremendous pride that we finally appointed our first Solicitor General who is of Native American ancestry. I believe you're a member of the Navajo Nation?
Yes.
All right.
Proud member of the Navajo Nation, yes.
250,000 strong. That's pretty good. Secretary Hayes, you mentioned in your testimony that you had a copy of a draft bill that you were wanted, that the administration is proposing. Did I read that correctly in your testimony? Has the administration developed a proposed bill relating to this issue of the settlement?
Yes, 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 the administration has. And the president sent it up to the leadership a week or two ago.
So we have it here among the members?
As far as I know.
I think Mr. Hayes says he has not received a copy.
Well,
certainly
we'll resolve that, Congressman Hastings. We'll get it to you.
Yeah, I think that would be a tremendous help. I'd like to, how many were involved in these negotiations? And I can understand you must have gone through some grueling days and weeks and months and finally reaching a settlement in December. I'm just curious, how many were involved in these negotiations? Was it just between Ms. Cobell and her attorneys and the officials of the Department of the Interior?
There were Ms. Cobell, her attorneys, there were attorneys, consultants, as well as, you know, I would say probably up, you know, maybe, you know, 10 or 11 folks from the Departments of the Interior and the Department of Justice. We filled a big conference table or two or and more.
So primarily it was just Ms. Cobell and her attorneys, plaintiffs of attorneys, and officials from both the Department of Justice and Department of the Interior. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
And of course, their attorneys represent the class. They have been certified. The class has been certified so that they are the appropriate and official representative of the hundreds of thousands of individual Indians who hold accounts. You know, we thought it appropriate that we be negotiating with them since they brought the litigation as a class.
How did you arrive at the $3.4 billion as the price settlement for this class action suit? I believe it's $1.4 billion for the class members and was it $2.some billion for another portion of this? How did you arrive at this figure?
And I'll let Mr. Hayes talk about the 2.0.
The reason why I raise this issue, this is one of the most contentious issues over the years, as I can remember. Not only was there tremendous disagreements among members or in the Congress, both houses, even within the administration. In fact, we even, I think, appropriated over $10 million to an auditing company or firm to find out exactly what was involved in the accounting. And even they couldn't come out with it after spending over $10 million to provide some kind of an accounting. But I'm just curious, how did you arrive at this?
You know, with respect to the $1.4 billion, you know, it was a negotiation, so certainly a negotiated amount. As we looked at it, we looked at quantifications of the case made over time. Both the court had previously suggested a number of about approximately $450 million for the accounting portion of the case. Plaintiffs at different times had argued for significantly more money. We also looked at we made our best estimate to look at the entire range of accounts and potential mismanagement claims. We have the benefit of looking at settlements in the tribal trust area, which give us some information about the potential size of these claims. And we did our best to come up with a reasonable settlement amount, but it was certainly a negotiation.
Well, what happened through all these years with the in terms of well, you're supposed to have some kind of a computer type accounting system that wasn't done properly, I suppose. But I'm just curious in terms of the numbers. This is what was agreed upon. Because it seems to be a lot higher than, in my humble opinion, over the years of what the numbers that were being thrown around. But $3.5 billion is somewhat a little low in my opinion.
Yeah.
Secretary Hayes?
Yeah, if I can
please
just make a couple of observations. I think that through the years of this litigation, this Congress has supported extensive work in terms of accounting work at the Department of the Interior through the Office of Special Trustee and the Office of Historical Accounting that has provided enormous information and provided the basis for a good discussion about the status of these accounts. So it's not as though these years of litigation have been for naught. There has been much more information developed over the years. I think that's been very helpful. I will say that this was a very tough negotiation. The same plaintiffs' lawyers who have been appropriately aggressive from day one were appropriately aggressive in our negotiations. And I'm somewhat offended by the suggestion that there was some collusion here between the United States and the plaintiffs, particularly when, to your point, the settlement amount is significantly less, frankly, than this Congress has had before it and that prior administrations have looked at for settlements. I view that as a sign of good, hard, appropriate negotiating on both sides. And I think the settlement is fair, and the plaintiffs do as well, but I encourage you to ask the same question of the plaintiffs' counsel.
I just have one more question to Ms. Tompkins. You've heard previously from testimony from Professor Monet in terms of the legal process or whatever the legal justification. Does this mean that once this settlement is done with congressional legislation to put the seal on it, that there can be no more class action suits concerning this matter?
If this settlement is approved by Congress and ultimately by the court, it will resolve the claims that are released in this settlement agreement. So it will resolve past claims for historical accounting, past claims for mismanagement of funds and assets. So those will be resolved. But moving forward, potential new claims could arise in the future, and that will always be the case. So those types of future claims would not be affected by this settlement agreement.
My time's up. Gentlelady from Wyoming.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would just comment that I had a law school professor named Joel Selig, who was Department of Justice, Jimmy Carter era, trained and was an expert in class action lawsuits. No University of Wyoming Law School graduate should have as much class action lawsuit experience as we did, but it was all because of Joel Selig. And so I highly recommend his particular expertise in implementing Rule 23 litigation. And I want to ask a couple questions. Deputy Secretary Hayes, could you describe a little bit more what arm's length interaction your department had with those folks whose claims will be extinguished?
Well, our negotiations were with the class representatives and with their lawyers. They started last summer, early in the summer, and We had intense discussions throughout the summer and into the fall, leading to this settlement. Now, I welcome you to ask the next panel and Eloise Cobell in terms of how they communicated with the class. As you well know from your training at the University of Wyoming Law School, one of the advantages of a class action is that a court has sanctioned a class and class representatives and counsel for the class to speak on behalf of the class. And of course, they've done that eloquently for the last 13 years. And those are the folks that we dealt with.
I'd like to follow up. You stated that the settlement addresses all existing and potential trust-related claims that the plaintiffs may have against the U.S. to date. What kinds of yet-to-be-litigated claims are being settled? And will it be clear to plaintiffs in accepting the settlement that they're extinguishing yet-to-be-litigated claims?
Well, I appreciate your raising that. That may be a misstatement in my testimony. I mean, we are not resolving claims for future that start tomorrow, or the day after the settlement.
Okay.
In fact, that's why the Secretary has entered an order that would become effective at the time of settlement at the request of the plaintiffs, so that we make sure that going forward we learn the lessons that we've learned over the last 13 years, take a fresh look, and make sure we don't make these mistakes again. And that's also why we're excited about the land consolidation program, because it'll minimize both the expense of these individual actions, but also the opportunities for mistake. At the same time, it puts money in the pocket of individual Indians.
Okay, good to know. Thank you very much. In visiting with the tribes in Wyoming, they gave me two primary messages. One was there is an absolute need to settle this matter, and I'm so pleased that this hearing is being held because some settlement proposal has come to fruition. And also that many individuals throughout Indian country have questions about the terms and the precedent-setting impacts of this. What kinds of steps does the department plan to take to educate tribal members on the full scope of the settlement?
Congresswoman, we described a little bit before what we've done to date in terms of our initial outreach to the tribes as a group with the Secretary, with the outreach through the National Congress on American Indians, through our individual tribal outreach. We had a Senate hearing before the turn of the year. We have this hearing. But I take seriously the points of Congressman Hastings and others here. We will redouble our efforts right now to make sure that there is good information out there about this settlement. This hearing has demonstrated that there is confusion in some quarters and some misinformation, and that does no one any good. We are confident this is an excellent settlement, and we will make ourselves available and aggressively put ourselves out there to communicate that as forcefully and as frequently as we can.
Thank you. And would the chairman indulge one more question, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Thank
sure.
you. Mr. Pirelli, one specific question that was asked by a tribal leader in my state was whether or not individual payments under the settlement would be taxable, and also whether it would affect formulas for other federal payments such as TANF. Can you respond to that?
And I think the settlement itself doesn't change the rules that would otherwise apply to those payments. So I think that there are, and I will get myself out of my depth quickly if I get too far into tax issues, but this may be the kind of thing that a written follow-up to you may be helpful to talk about the general rules that would apply.
That would be great, and the tribes in Wyoming would really appreciate it, and I'll be sure to pass it on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman from New Mexico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, welcome to all of you. I had an opportunity to work with Solicitor Tompkins when we were both working for the state of New Mexico, and have nothing but high regard for her legal mind. And I want to sort of direct my first question to both Mr. Hayes and Mr. Pirelli from the point of view of your two agencies. I don't want to sidetrack us too much, but I want to ask about the tribal trust lawsuits that are also currently pending in the federal courts and are based on many of the same problems that the Cobell case is inherent in the Cobell case. These are with tribes as plaintiffs rather than individuals, and I just want to ask for both of you, what are you and your agencies doing to make sure that those cases are also receiving the same sort of high level of attention and potential for resolve that this case is seeing?
Thank you for your question, Congressman. And this is a very important point. There are nearly 100 lawsuits that individual tribes have brought in terms of management of their tribal trust assets. A few have settled. We have been in discussions with the Justice Department about how to pivoting off of this settlement with the class of individual Indian account holders, we can get many, many more of those tribal cases into a settlement mode. That will be our sole attention once we resolve this matter. We are looking at budgeting adequate amounts of budget, working with the Congress to ensure that we have the support needed to do the fact-finding, et cetera, that will enable these tribal cases to be settled. And we've had some preliminary discussions with the Justice Department about some process thoughts to help facilitate a fast-tracking of the settlement process. And I defer to Mr. Pirelli for supplementing that.
Two things. I'll first clarify what I just said, because the settlement doesn't deal with the tax issues. The legislation that we propose does deal with the tax and benefit issues. I'm sorry the Congresswoman had to leave before I could clarify that. But when we send up a copy of the legislation, there's a specific provision on the tax and benefits implication that I think will be helpful to tribal leaders to understand that. With respect to the tribal trust cases, they are really the next step in this path in trying to bring resolution to all of these claims. The solicitor and I recently sent a letter to some of the leaders of the groups that are representing significant numbers of the tribes and inviting them to a settlement negotiation at which we would participate personally. And we envision having that scheduled in short order and hopefully beginning a process that will allow us to move forward in those cases as we have here.
I appreciate both of your responses on that. I know there's at least five cases in New Mexico with the Navajo Nation, the Jicarilla and Mescalero Apache tribes, and Pueblos of Zia and Laguna that are all involved in related litigation. The last thing I would just do is for Ms. Tompkins, wanted to give you the opportunity to, if you wanted to address the matter that Professor Monette brought up at the beginning, where he seemed to characterize your view on an issue, and wanted to give you an opportunity to characterize your own view on that.
Thank you, Congressman Heinrich. Sure, I guess that my only comment on that was the question we discussed last night was really just it reminded me of law school and one of those convoluted, arcane questions that you would get when a professor was throwing you using the Socratic method. So, I did look at the issue, and it is not an issue that raises any concern in the settlement agreement. It is about some very technical language in a definition part of the settlement, but it's not a problem. It basically includes the words lands and assets in the accounting definition because that's an outgrowth of the litigation. There was a time in the litigation when the parties were debating whether or not asset statements, descriptions of the land, the underlining land, should be in the accounting statements. And so that's just to ensure that we're addressing that issue in that definition. So thank you.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, I yield back the rest of my time.
Thank you. I'd like to turn the time over to our ranking member for further questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I don't have another question. It's more of a request because you said properly so that this hearing has been very good. Generally, hearings engender more questions in the future. Surprise, surprise. You were very kind to me in responding to the questions in a two-week time period on the letter that I sent you. What I would ask you is that questions that are given to you after this meeting, if you would respond in a like time, a two-week period, because there was a very tight time period on that, and as quickly as we can get these questions or answers back for these questions, that would be helpful. Could you set a goal of responding to whatever follow-up questions that response will be within a two-week period?
Absolutely, Congressman.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I just want one added question to the follow-up from the gentleman from New Mexico, I just want to get it straightened for the record that there are tribes who are already have filed lawsuits in the same case matter that we're talking about. Are you suggesting that we're going to do something to disallow them from pursuing their efforts in filing a lawsuit in that same?
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all, Congressman. I apologize for any confusion in that regard. There are approximately 99 current lawsuits filed by tribes that are not affected by this settlement, and this settlement doesn't preclude tribes or tribal governments from filing any action.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I believe we have one more panel here, our third one. And this is Ms. Eloise Cobell. I believe she probably has a couple of attorneys that will be attending here. We would welcome her to testify now.